The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.
I'm not finished yet, it took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas, they get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
All right, you're welcome along to the GAA, sponsored by AIB. Conan and Connor here as usual on a Thursday. And another Connor coming up on the show here in a little while, lads. Connor Whelan. So really looking forward to that. Like, he's only 21. He's Young Player of the Year. He's got an All-Star. It's an interesting story that in 2015, his first year, he's only 18. And he's with the minors that year. And he's called into the panel before the All-Ireland quarter-final and he rips it up in an A versus B match down in Turles, and suddenly he gets his debut in an All-Ireland quarter-final. His first three games at any level for the seniors. Usually you like an old challenge game to get yourselves going and you'd be even nervous for a challenge game. I remember my first challenge game with Leash and it's like, oh my God, I'm on the senior panel. His first is an All-Ireland quarter-final, second All-Ireland semi-final, third All-Ireland final. Like, it's beyond belief how much that fella and experience he has under his belt at a 21-year-old.
Sometimes when you're thrown in at the deep end, I'm just thinking of Shane O'Donnell. I know he wasn't exactly a newcomer to the panel, but when you're told kind of at the last minute that you're being thrown in, you don't really have time for nerves. So yeah, quarter final, that's something else.
Yeah, no, definitely. To stick on the hurling team here, lads, Derek McGrath has been have committed to 2018 season, and I don't care if you're a hurling fan or not. Usually GAA fans are a fan of Derek McGrath. His honesty in interviews, his like the connection he has to his team. Seeing him in tears after the All-Ireland final, like, I mean, he's kind of soft, he's got a huge connection to these young lads. He's a father figure to them, and I'd say it would have broken his heart to walk away, knowing they've got to the final now. You know, they can work on that. He's committed to one more year and see where that goes.
Hard man with a soft centre, I suppose.
No, there's a bit of steel to him too. He's put it up to Cody on the line, like, he has that.
And those, like, you know, those pictures that you're talking about with Dan Shanahan after the game, like, it showed how much it means to him. And it is rare that you get a manager like that who A, knows what he's talking about tactically and he can implement it with his team, but B, most importantly, probably gets on with his team well. Now this is going to be his fifth season, and it's a tough thing to do, to have that energy and connection with the players for that long, but obviously he does it. The only thing I would say is that, it's four seasons gone now. They've two Munster finals, one All-Ireland final, one league final, which they didn't win. I know they have a league title on the way, but they're banging on the door so long, this probably will be the last year.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it has to happen at some stage.
It's even funny. Like, I mean, Dan Shanahan and Owen Murphy are also back in place, but it's interesting. You even read comments from Tony Brown last year, and he's saying that Waterford has split 50-50 on Derek McGrath. On his tactics, maybe more his tactics than him. And it's like, Jesus, what do you want, Waterford? Like, where he's taken Waterford to where they are now. Now, I know they've lost some big games, but they're lost to Tipperary, lost to Galway. You know, they won a league final and then lost the second one, and they were robbed against Clare in that league final. Remember that late free given to Tony Kelly for it was nowhere near a free. But anyways, like, they're one of the big guns now. Like, what do Waterford people want? Like, I mean, it's beyond belief that I can't even comprehend that.
It's the same in Mayo though with Stephen Rochford, and once you have a modicum of success, then that people will kind of, you know, latch onto you. But I think what you mentioned, that was part of the opposition to him was part of this massive sweeper debate that was in hurling last summer, and I think Waterford were being held up as the poster boys. So because of that, it was seen as negative in some places. So maybe the purists down in Waterford didn't want to be seen to be back in Derek McGrath. But I think it's great news, as you said, such a connection with the players, and even selfishly from a media point of view, I think it's great, because there's no more honest interviewee in the GAA than Derek McGrath, and he shows that, like, you can be honest and you can give away little tidbits and trade secrets, and it's not going to affect you as much as some managers would believe it does.
Exactly. Insights. Like, I mean, you can give insights into what you're thinking and what players are thinking without that giving away anything. Like, I mean, I think that's very, very obvious. International Rules, lads, is on at 5 a.m. Ireland versus Australia in Adelaide Oval at 5 a.m. on Saturday morning. I was going to get up for this, but I'm not getting up for like a Las Vegas boxing fight type thing. My interest is not that high in the international rules that I'm going to be getting up at 5 a.m. Second test is on in Perth. That's on at 8:45. I will watch that. So I think I'll just get a report from the first one. Let's see how it went, and then maybe watch the second one. I don't know about you, But we talked last week on last week's show about whether we had still had the interest in it or not. My interest ain't 5 a.m. interest. Yeah. I know that for a fact.
And that's a, you know, we've waited for this to come back, the two tests to come back. This is the first one. Like, Jesus, could all be gone by the time the second one comes and anybody is bothered getting up to watch it. Like, it's very risky. I mean,
but it's not as if it has a massive international audience. It only has to appeal to two countries.
That's it.
There's not that much of a difference between them that you can't have a good time for both. So
it's an awful kind of shooting themselves in the foot, like an example of that, isn't it? Like, to have it at 5 a.m. over here. Like, are they taking this seriously or what is this? Because, like, I mean, why would you have it on at 5 a.m.? Who is going to, in their right minds outside of friends and family, family is going to be getting up at 5 a.m. How is that promoting it here? And what's the point of it? Because the second one's at 8:45. This game could be gone after the first test. Like, Australia or Ireland could have a 30-point lead. Yeah. So even the second one that is more watchable and at a much better time, you might not have that interest because the first one could be a damn squib. So they're really... Like, what kind of organisation is it?
And spare a thought for the poor newspaper journalist over there who's what's going to be 27 hours later before anybody reads their report on it. And, like, you know, if coming at 5 a.m. you have to wait a whole day to get their actual take on it in the newspaper. It's just, it's horrible from a media point of view, it's horrible from a fan point of view. Yeah, like, it'll be interesting to see how many people are bothered to watch. And if it's one-sided, then the second test is always a damn squib.
In Ireland, yeah, that's exactly what I said, Conan, so thanks for summarising or paraphrasing exactly.
I wasn't listening. That's such a good point to make.
Well, that's a very good comeback. I wasn't listening. Sometimes I get that impression, Conan, when I talk, that you're not actually listening to me. They're expecting a big crowd. They're expecting 40,000 lads, which is a huge crowd, and that's great to see that interest, and it's great to see it back at two tests, because the one test wasn't... like giving it any respect at all, and then to bring it back to two tests and you say, right, let's take this a little bit more seriously, 40,000 crowd, and to stick it on at 5 a.m. you know, it just doesn't make any sense to me. Kerry proposal, lads, is this came out of a county board meeting in the Rose Hotel in Tralee. No real reason for telling you where it was actually held, but they've come up with the idea that they're going to start their championship on September the 2nd. Now, this is almost in keeping with what we've talked about on this show, and this is what club players want. So Kerry chairman Tim Murphy suggested that this idea was well received by club officials, and I'd imagine this would be very well received from club players as well, because what club players want is a date of when they start the championship. They need mentally to know, when can I book a holiday? When does the championship start? And the problem with a lot of counties is it starts the week when the county's knocked out. So you're constantly not knowing where the hell you are in the whole system. This master fixtures list does not fix that problem. It throws an April thing, and like, the more we think about this all week, we said it last week on the show, that a lot of managers, you're starting your provincial championships in May, there isn't a hope in hell they're going to allow their players disappear for a month club. So this is a nonsense of a thing, and this has been flagged up a long time. But Kerry's proposal is to start the championship on September the 2nd, and that's in keeping with, if Kerry get to the All-Ireland final, they will start the week after. If Kerry don't get to the All-Ireland final, they're starting September the 2nd. If they get knocked out in the quarter final, they're starting. So players know when the championship starts, and clubs know, club managers know, let's build these up now for the month of August, and we're going to go with a date in mind. And that seems to me like such a sensible thing to do. And this is Kerry, which is at the higher end, that are worried about All-Ireland finals, do you know? So, like, I mean, most, like I said, in Laois, this starts on August the 1st, August the 2nd, whatever, first weekend in August. That's what club players want. That's what Master Fixtures List should be fixing. That's what CPA Master Fixture List should be fixing. Give them starting dates when the inter-county's over.
And if Kerry can do it, then surely any county can do it. And I think it, this the kind of the free month of April couldn't suit any county better than it suits Kerry, because they have the club championship and they have the county championship.
You'd need to do a college degree to understand
It's pretty convoluted down there, so if they can manage it, you know, anyone can. But yeah, that's it. They have their club championship that it really means, not just a secondary competition, it really means a lot to players in Kerry. And because they're not out in Munster till June the 2nd, clubs will genuinely have their county players. There shouldn't be too much of an issue of Eamon Fitzmaurice looking to pull them in April. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then by the time when Kerry are involved in the championship, that's when they say that league fixtures are going to be played, so the rest of the club players aren't going to be left idle during the summer. And then come the end of the summer, as you said, September 2nd, they know, you know, they can plan for that, championship goes ahead.
That's it, yeah. No, it makes perfect sense. And, like, I mean, play away at your league games in every county without your county players. Give club players league games uninterrupted, you know when they start, then they know when the championship starts, And to the three of us, we're all nodding in approval that this seems so logical again. Niall Morgan, we talked about Conor McManus. This is the shift in Ulster football. You see, I include these lads because this really just is an ego boost for me, who came back from watching Monaghan and Fermanagh in the first round of the Ulster Championship, came back and went, Monaghan will never compete with those tactics. I was laughed at in the studio by Conan Doherty. Yeah,
compete with Dublin, no one
wouldn't accept this. So now we have Niall Morgan, who's over, he's with the International Rules, right? So this is an interview that's been done over in Australia, and he says, we full faith in Mickey Hart and whatever style he wants to play, we'll play. I'd say it probably will be a bit more attacking next year because we've seen the way we're playing isn't going to beat the likes of Kerry, Mayo and Dublin. Thank you very much. So this is Conor McManus, the like number one corner forward probably in Ulster, and now you've Niall Morgan, who is like, you know, a big name in the Tyrone team, and they're both saying this is not going to work. The penny's dropping a year after I said it, lads. So like, I mean, if we just have some people listen to this podcast a little bit more often, that this is being flagged up before the penny's dropping a year later.
Yeah, I would love to find out though what the idea is. Like, Morgan might be talking rubbish there. He might be paranoid that Paul Geaney and Peter Crowley are giving interviews at either side of him and he's trying to show off. But like, what is the happy medium? Because like, yeah, I know that they're only to open up a little bit more to really hurt teams, even though they hammered all the below par teams, but it did suit their team to a large extent as well, and the players that they had, that running game. Now, having won inside forward,
we've seen nothing else. We've seen nothing else from them. You see, if they change it up, Brennan could get on the team inside Ronan O'Neill and McCurry. You know, and even Bradley. That we haven't seen the other side, so we don't necessarily know. You know what? Who was it was telling us that? I think it was Peter Canavan. I was asking him about Brennan. Why is Brennan not making the team? Yeah. So we only pick one forward. And that's Mark Bradley. Yeah. Bradley, who runs tirelessly over and back. Brennan's a finisher, so there's no real place for a finisher on that Tyrone team. So, like, I mean, if they did change it, maybe Tyrone have one or two unbelievably accurate finishers in club football that could fill that kind of finisher's role beside another man. You know, we don't know.
And I actually think like a lot of those players. I mean, you saw some of the boys that were coming on. Like, Tyrone have naturally gifted footballers, like, so they will have an abundance of those players. I'm really sure of it. Brennan does look a cut above from the highlights against Strabane. Mm-hmm. I mean, if Tyrone are playing Strabane anytime soon, like, he'll definitely get the nod. But yeah, like I do, it's still tough to base it all on a Dublin game because it is Dublin. They got so close to Mayo last year with 14 men. Maybe opening it up didn't help them in the end. But like the sample, if you're talking about the whole year, they hammered everybody else.
But surely that's what they have to base it on. Their ambitions at this stage after winning a couple of Ulsters would be in All-Ireland, and they have to
It really is. Even them more than Monaghan have to change because another Ulster is no big deal to them. You could understand Monaghan going, we'd be happy with an Ulster next year. Tyrone cannot be happy with an Ulster. They have to look at a bigger picture, and the ones in their way are Mayo, Kerry and Dublin. Yeah. And that's why he's referencing them, and he's saying that without tinkering something, like they've failed against all three in the last 3 years. Like, I mean, Mayo last year in that tactical game, Kerry the year before in the semi-final. So he is accepting that it's not worked three times. So like, what are you know, and it's actually getting worse if the Dublin result is to go.
But he said as well, he said, we played this way all year, so we're hardly going to change to play Dublin. But surely you have to change to beat Dublin because it's so patently obvious that playing the way you were isn't going to beat them.
Yeah, well, and he's even admitting in the interview that when they scored the goal, we were gone.
He's that was stupid, yeah.
Like, isn't that unbelievable that they have it in their head, we have to be ahead to protect this. What happens if you're not, mate? Like, you weren't after... Like, isn't it mad that such an important game... And Tyrone are so blinkered in the way they play that the minute that goal went in, even their body language, you know, that they were gone. That was it.
I used to play under Paddy Campbell, fullback for Donegal from Jim McGuinness's club, and he's now in the running for the Derry Minor job, actually. But the tactic was obviously ultra defensive, hit them on the break. But the first point, we had this circle of trust and we had to stay inside it. And
you're going to break it now.
Forget it. He took me off in the intermediate final. The very first point was, we must get into the lead. That is crucial, like, and that's the whole tactic. And how brittle is that tactic if you're not in the lead? There was no real plan. Yeah. You know, I hate when Tyrone people use that sort of Dublin goal, the Conor Callaghan goal, as an excuse of why they lost. The goal came too early, but you didn't lose by 3 points. Yeah. Like, if they had a stuck to the system, lost by 3 points, then you could say it, but they got blown apart in the end.
Yeah, maybe, but I think mentally, this was not part of the plan. Yeah. we're gone here. You know, that's kind of it. Another one is Brian Fenton. This he's did an interview with the Irish News, and he's got some interesting stuff in it. First, he denies the fact that Dublin avoided the international rules, and I believe him, and we said this on the show. He said he just started a new job and he can't just go off for 3 weeks after starting a new job, and that's completely logical. You have to remember these lads are amateurs and you can't just go. There's a life as well as everything else, and the Dublin holiday, and in October all your holiday days are taken up. Now, I know no Dublin player not are going doesn't look great when every other big county has at least one representative, but I believe them when they say they all had different excuses. Brian Fenton is a player that we admire a lot on this show for being an absolute phenomenal midfielder. Some weird comments about today. Like, I mean, sometimes you wonder what way players are thinking. So he's talking about young players heading off to the United States during the summer, and he has a good point about why they should be kept and he wants to keep them. His idea, young players could be paid a fee per game to encourage them to stay home instead of heading off to the States. Now, I don't know, Brian. I'm fighting to try and get you some money for selling out Croke Park. Trying to get some club players pay for play during the summer. I don't think I can even commit to that. I cannot commit to, maybe in 30 years' time I'll get on this bandwagon when 20,000 start showing up to club games. But I think you're pissing against the wind here, Brian.
Yeah, and what could happen then is you get agents trying to get people links to America just to get paid to play. That could be where you come in then, Will.
Yeah, I never thought of that.
Yeah, it's certainly a strange one. Connor, were you saying this was at a pitch opening?
It was at a pitch opening in Belfast. So he sounds like he was just kind of caught off guard, really.
Yeah.
Like I'd love to flesh out, as you said, you know, if one player is getting paid, like, that not going to go down well in the dressing room. How come you're getting money? And I'm not getting any money. And then we were kind of wondering whether, does this specifically apply to county players who threaten to go? And then, you know, then they're told, oh, no, wait, hold on, we'll give you a few grand. Yeah. So, yeah, I don't think he fleshed it out, to be honest. I mean, where's the money going to come from? He said was the GA isn't short of money.
It's not short of money. That is the one thing he was 100% right on. The GA is not short of money. There's no doubt about that. But whether you're going to get some sort of pay for play, maybe he was cut off the hop, because Brian does very few interviews. Maybe he doesn't trust himself coming out with, coming out with stuff like this. But anyways, Tracy Kennedy, lads, is after getting the job. She's going unopposed for Cork, I suppose, as chairperson. We're used to chairman, but obviously it's chairperson for this one, or chairwoman, whatever you want to call it. But I've had dealings with Tracy Kennedy in my previous job when she was Cork PRO. One of the best PROs I've ever had to deal with. She's been really, really good. Went to vice chairperson then, and now she's getting the role as chairperson. So congratulations to Tracy. And we know Tyrone have a female chairperson as well.
Roisin Jordan.
And I'm not sure there's barriers to, you know, women becoming chairpersons if that's what they really want. Because too often in clubs, and you see it in every club in the country, lads, and it happened in Portlaoise all up through the way when I was playing. Like, the women make the tea and sandwiches after training, and the men do the training and do the administration. Like, I mean, and that has to change. But, like, I mean, I remember in the Portlaoise club, that's the roles the women want. So it's a really weird one in dynamic and the culture in the GAA and how to change that. And I'm not sure there's barriers there if that's what the women want, or maybe they don't see other women doing it, so they don't think there's that path for them. But obviously with Roisin and Tracy getting these big jobs, maybe it will kind of tell women that your job isn't always making tea, even though that's very much appreciated as well. That's not necessarily the role that you need to have within the GAA.
Yeah, like, and the barriers are probably coming down, if there were any, but there probably are some natural ones just ingrained through years of men having those roles and stuff. But yeah, I know from my own club back home, like, we were hounding two particular women that they go for the chairperson role because we thought they'd be perfect for it. And yeah, it's a younger club, so a lot of women were very important in lifting the whole thing off the ground, and especially in the fundraising and all that. Like, so yeah, like, it's definitely, I don't think there's an issue. Like, when you look at Tracy Kennedy and the way you speak about her, like, for me, it's just like this. It's about time, like, the best people get the job, and more often than not, the best people are usually women.
Yeah, and she'll have her hands full with Frank Murphy, who's been in the job for a very, very long time. It was actually Frank. Remember the story about me sending off not being allowed play, and then Tom Kelly, Noel Garvin being allowed play? Yeah. Been led to believe it's Frank Murphy that came down with the two different rulings for the exact same case. It's like, how much experience do you need, Frank, to be able to actually get this call right?
He's only been there since 1973.
73? No, I never heard of that rule. No, I'm not really sure
He's got 1 year extensions for the last 5 years. So
I'd hate to have seen Frank in his first year in the job, if that's what he's like now. Right, listen, we'll have to leave it there for top of the show. We'll be back in a second with Conor Whelan.
There's no point in papering over like that. It is extremely tough. I won't tell you, but again, it's not about me or Morris or anyone else. It's about Waterford.
We've waited so long. I know I've seen one of your tweets yesterday. It said 6 years. Lost to the Leash, man, but it's a long 6 years for us there, and we're absolutely thrilled.
I remember after Leinster final, I was through the morning. My nephew was out in the lawn and he was faking freeze with his socks pulled up, pretending to be TJ Reid, and he fairly brought me back down to earth that day anyway.
All right, delighted to say Conor Whelan is on the line now. Conor, Young Player of the Year, All-Ireland title and Leinster title all in the same year. So it was a pretty fairy tale year for you.
It was a fairly satisfactory year really from a Galway perspective. But I suppose the main aim for us sitting out at the start of the year was to win the All-Ireland, and I suppose we're just happy that we managed to do that.
Yeah, was there pressure on you setting out at the start of the year?
I wouldn't say pressure. I just say that, you know, we kind of felt that this was going to be the year that was going to make or break us, and you know, we were just happy that we finally crossed that line. You know, 29 years is a very long time.
Yeah.
For a county like Galway to be waiting, and you know, it's just sheer delight really that we're able to finally cross the line.
Now, I know you're going to say that it's a team game and the objective is the All-Ireland, and that's all true, but it must be a really nice feeling to get the All-Star at such a young age and the Young Player of the Year as well, because, you know, like, I mean, I've played Gaelic football and I would love to have got an All-Star. I understand that the team comes first, but the personal kind of awards are nice too.
I suppose the personal awards are really the cherry on top at the end of the year, but you know, as I said, that the main ambition was when they are, and then when you have managed to win the All-Ireland, then I suppose the All-Star and the Young Player of the Year are the cherry on top. But the All-Star wouldn't be possible without the help of my teammates, you know, and I suppose just maybe from my perspective, from the forwards in Galway, I think they just worked awful hard this year, and I was just happy to be part of that. And I think it could have been any one of the six Galway forwards that picked up an All-Star, and I was just lucky enough to be one of the chosen.
Yeah, take me back, Conor, to when you started, because you had some serious kind of introduction into senior hurling. You missed the league. It was 2015.
Yeah.
You weren't called in during the league. You were called in after the league, and suddenly you played brilliant in a challenge game, in a A versus B's game in Thurles, and suddenly you're playing in an All-Ireland quarter final at 18 years of age.
Well, I was called in January of 2015, but I was in college in Limerick and I didn't have a car, so it wasn't really it just wasn't really something that I thought was really going to work out, so I left it. And then I got asked in again then after the first Dublin game when Galway drew, and I just said that I'd give it a go, and I was just happy to be part of the panel, and I was just pushing for a place and competing with the rest of the lads, and we played in an A versus B game down in Thurles one day, and I just happened to be on the end of a few nice moves, and I suppose that was kind of the platform for my introduction into senior hurling, and I suppose it just kind of went from there. But the year kind of ended on a disappointing note really. I felt at halftime that game that we were in a decent position to push on, and we just never did. So I suppose that was kind of the only drawback from that. And you know, I just kind of felt a sense of unfinished business really, and was kind of anxious to try and push on this year and last year as well. And I was just kind of happy that things kind of fell into place this year, I suppose.
What's it like running out as an 18-year-old in an All-Ireland quarterfinal? You scored 1-2 against Cork. Like, your first three games with Galway were an All-Ireland quarterfinal, semi-final, and final. You're 18 years old. Like, I mean, is this all? Like, are you taking this in your stride, or do you have a second to stop and think, what the hell is going on here?
I don't think you really you know, think about it at the time. I suppose I was just, you know, we were just completely driven on winning the All-Ireland. And I think the following few months that passed by then, I suppose you kind of look back and reflect, and, you know, it all happened very, very, very quickly for me. And I suppose then the following year then proved a small bit tougher, you know, opponents know you, and it's no longer a surprise package, and with that comes a bit of expectation. And you know, I felt I kind of struggled a small bit last year, but, you know, kind of I'm no longer the forward that no one knows about. And yeah. You know, that was kind of a massive learning experience for me last year. And you know, the best way to learn from that is experience, really, I suppose. And you know, I've 3 years under my belt now at the age of under 21, hurling, just finished this year, like. So I suppose in a way it was a very good learning curve, and it was great experience to get. But at the same time, with that comes expectation, and that's just an area that I had to develop my game, really, I suppose, and just try and push on from that and try and evolve from being, you know, somebody who had potential to perform, and, you know, who had a decent year in 2015, and try and push on from that. And I suppose that was probably the most difficult thing, really.
Yeah, and so you're happy with your return this year. Look, you obviously got an All-Star, you got 16 points from play, you know, scoring very freely, got 4 in a really close game against Tipperary in the semi-final, which was really important. So are you happy with where your game is at and how you've developed? You're kind of into more of a scoring forward. We know about your work rate, but where do you see your development?
I don't think you can ever really look back and say you're entirely happy. You know, I felt I didn't have the best All-Ireland final. You know, I was just happy that we crossed the line. But when you look back and analyse these things, you know, there's always loads of area for improvement. So, you know, I'm not the complete package yet, and I probably never will be. As an inter-county hurler, you can never stop learning and never stop evolving your game. And as the game changes, you also have to develop your game. You know, like, Joe Canning is 29 now, and he still isn't the full package. He's still learning every day, and, you know, Joe's always eager to learn, and, you know, that's kind of reflected through the whole team, and both for me personally and both for Galway. You know, I think there's loads that we have to improve on, and loads of areas we can develop our game going forward. And you know, it was a satisfactory year, and we achieved our goals, but, you know, at the end of December now, you have to hand back the cup and start fresh. So, you know, the memories will slowly start to fade, and it'll be into the thick of the league action. So, you know, there's loads of areas for me to improve on personally as a player.
Where do you think you need to improve on most?
You know, I had a few pouring off wide all year. You know, Galway didn't have any goal since against Dublin, yeah, in the first round of the Leinster Championship.
What's the story with that, by the way?
Well, I don't know, to be honest. It's just a mixture of playing against some packed defences, playing against defences with a sweeper, and having to develop our game so that we're shooting from out the field, and we're trying to entice the sweeper out the field, and also, you know, just maybe not being as clinical enough as we should have been. And you know, some of that responsibility lies at me. I didn't score any goal this year, like, so that's just one particular area where I suppose that I can look towards improving for 2018.
Because when I looked at that, and, you know, you obviously failed to score in 4 of your 5 games, but 3 of those 4 were against Waterford, Wexford and Offaly, and Offaly packed the defence against you as well, I'm led to believe. So maybe that was a tactical decision by Micheál Donoghue to say, we're going to face extra defenders, want loads of movement in there out of you, Conor, but we're probably going to try and work it back out to where we have more space.
Yeah, well, I think it's just, you know, a decision that's kind of made that, you know, realistically, you're not going to have a whole pile of opportunities inside against, you know, four defenders on 3 forwards. So, you know, that was a conscious decision, I'm sure, that was made to decide to shoot from the field, and obviously it was well vindicated. You know, we shot some very high scores without needing to score goals, and it just shows you that you don't necessarily have to always score goals. That, you know, if you can fire over 3 points, you know, it's equally as effective as maybe scoring a goal, you know.
Yeah, we know. Go on.
No, I was just saying that's just, you know, something to look at from both perspectives, really. You know, like, obviously we need to have a goal threat, but you know, we did crank up some serious scores. So
yeah, no, exactly. And the impact Michal Donoghue had since he came in, like, for you, because we know he's kind of known as a coach. You know, so, like, I mean, what advice or what did he think you needed to work on? Like, I mean, straight away pops into my head your physical appearance. You know, we know he brought in the strength and conditioning coach with him. It looks like maybe he did a lot of work with you on that, because I think you're in the programme for the All-Ireland final this year as 13 stone and 8 pounds. Now, we all know players lie and add a few extra on to those things. I don't know if you were doing that, but, like, your physical appearance, you've gotten a lot bigger and stronger.
Well, I suppose I started working with Lucas Kirstenstein, and you know, he was a massive element of you know, from a personal level, just somebody who I was able to speak to and able to get very good advice off. And you know, I share a very good relationship with Michal and all his backroom staff, Franny Ford and Noel Larkin and Damien Joyce and David Morris, and, you know, everyone really worked well as a team. And I suppose we all just took individual advice from everyone. And, you know, like, at 21 years of age, you're always going to be open to learning and learn new things. And I suppose Lucas just showed me where I could, instead of necessarily putting on body mass, I could maybe get leaner. And you know, I felt that was kind of a massive thing for me, that in 2016, I was perhaps carrying too much weight, and I was a small bit bigger, actually.
Right.
I know people say that I put on serious size this year, but I was actually carrying more mass last year. I was 89 kg, and this year I was 87. And that was huge for me, that I, you know, I felt more freer, and I felt that I was really able to maximise my ability, and I felt that my stamina was improved from not carrying so much weight, that I was so much muscle mass that I was actually gassing out, but instead I was actually leaner, and therefore I was more durable and able to last longer in games. And you know, I felt that was huge for me, really, and that was something that Lucas really hammered home to me, to be honest.
Okay, that's interesting, because straight away I'm thinking of that. I think it was your fourth point against Tipperary, when you were under pressure and you're able to get the ball with three or four lads around you and kind of get a point out of nothing, whereas, you know, 2 years ago you might not have been able to do that.
Well, the most direct comparison, really, I suppose you could apply to that was in 2016. I think I was taken off on 55, maybe 57 minutes, and I had completely out my feet and completely gassed out. And
right.
You know, I felt I had done the same level of training this year, but perhaps maybe without carrying as much muscle mass, that I was able to last longer, and my stamina was improved. And, you know, that's just something that was massive for me, that I was able to stay going for the full 70 minutes. And, you know, I finished every game this year for Galway, the five championship games, and, you know, I didn't think that was huge.
Yeah, I was reading this morning you're Shane O'Donnell's second cousin. Are you close to Shane, or has he given you any advice? You know, he obviously burst onto the scene at a very young age, similar to you. I know he's not that much older than you, but have you a relationship with him?
I know Shane pretty well. Obviously, he's my second cousin, and you know, he had a fantastic year in 2013, and he had a very good year again this year. And you know, he's obviously a fantastic forward, and he's also a number 13 or a number 14 or 15. So, you know, obviously I'd be looking towards him for areas I can improve my game on. And I suppose, you know, Shane's biggest element is his goal threat and his direct run the goal. And I suppose that's something that, you know, I kind of look towards, and, you know, hope to eventually be able to take some of that and bring it towards my game.
Yeah, exactly. So you might get on the phone to Shane over the winter and do a goal scoring tutorial with him or something like that.
Sure, we'll see. we'll try and rest up now for the next week or two, and then hopefully go back at something again.
Kamir, just finally, you're studying to be a teacher. I see. Did your inter-county career influence your decision to be a teacher, and that you'd have all the summers off, or did you want to be a teacher anyway?
Being a teacher was always kind of something that I kind of looked towards when I was in school. It's just, you know, it's a nice job. It's 9 to 4, and
the summer's
Friday
off.
And the summer's off as well are obviously a massive thing. And you know, I think we've 10 or 15 teachers in the Galway setup, and you know, it just seems as a very appealing job. And you know, just teaching English and history is kind of something that I kind of always really wanted to do. I had a very good interest in history, and you know, it's just something that I enjoy really.
Is it, no, but the reason I asked you that is because I think I was reading something during the year about Waterford, and they had so many of their players in college, you know, and that lifestyle is conducive to playing inter-county. Is that spoken about squads and careers, and how you can kind of fit careers into your training routine, because that obviously dominates so much of your time, or is that just, it's not spoken about?
Well, obviously, your hurling career dominates your life at the moment, but I see myself first as a person and then second as an inter-county hurler, because, you know, at the end of the day, at some stage, I'm going to have to hang up my boots, and then I don't want to be still stuck in college going over, or you know,
yeah,
just working a job that I've no interest in, or that doesn't excite me. So, you know, that's a massive thing from the GPA, and from chatting to David Collins and chatting to all these boys, and particularly chatting to older lads in the team, that they be telling you to, you know, just make sure that you're going somewhere, and that you're, you know, and also that it impacts on your hurling career too, that you know that you're doing something, and that you're kind of satisfied in life, and that you're not just seeing yourself as a hurler, because at the end of the day, this bubble bursts at some stage. You know, I just be very conscious that I'm in a job that I'm happy doing, and that I'm going in a forward direction, and that, you know, teaching is something that I can see myself doing, and it's something that I can see myself happy doing, regardless of whether I'm hurling or not. So I suppose that's just something that's important to me as a person, that I'm not just seeing myself as a hurler, and I'm not a hurler every single day of the week, because at the end of the day, it's an amateur sport, and we don't get paid for it, and what I get paid for doing is teaching, and you know, that's just something that I'd be very anxious to ensure that I get fully qualified, and that I'm fully qualified to teach.
Yeah, no, that's a great attitude, and it's great advice from Collins there, because, like, I mean, I don't think people realise at inter-county level how much it dominates your thought process, and especially the novelty of when you're a young fella at your age, how much you think about it, because how important it is to you. It's very easy to get sidetracked in that and think everything else will work out, you know, something else will come up, you know, that it doesn't always come up. And like, I was left in my 30s with a career I didn't like, and, you know, left with my hands hanging. So that's definitely good advice for young players, not to forget about their life.
Yeah, and I, you know, I was watching Andy Moran's clip on Twitter the last day, and he was saying like how that sometimes when he was younger, that's because he had so much time, and maybe he wasn't working as much as he is now, and that he didn't have children to be thinking about, that perhaps maybe he was overthinking the game. And you know, I think that's kind of one of the side effects of college, is that you've maybe more time than you would if you're in a 9-to-5 job, or you know, working out in the working world. And you know, it's just important that you don't overthink the game either. And like at the end of the day, it's only a game, and life goes on. And you know, you have to put the bad defeats to bed, and you have to move on from the victories as well. So I suppose, you know, college life is nice in a way that you're able to handle your time easier, but you know, at the same time, you don't want to be overthinking the game too much, because you know, I think we're all guilty of doing that at certain stages of our careers. You know, just thinking about the game too much, whether the game is ahead of us or behind us. And you know, you have to move on from the sore defeats, and you have to move on from the victories too, at some stage. And that's just something that I'd also be anxious to do. You know, like this year is over now, and we'll be looking towards moving on and aiming for the league next. You know, the league is starting the 28th of January, I think, and no, you probably won't feel that coming around as soon as Boston is over, and you know, hopefully be back doing some training, and then it's Christmas and all of a sudden you're stuck in the middle of Fitzgibbon and the league. So you know, the year doesn't be long coming around, so you have to put the nice victories to bed as well at some stage. So it's just something that I'll be planning on addressing in the very near future.
Yeah, okay, listen, Conor, thanks very much for taking time for us, and we'll look forward to seeing you banging in a couple of goals next year in the Championship.
Yeah, all right, that sound.
Dearie, great to finally get to interview you.
Oh, really, yeah.
why
is it great?
Why do you not do many interviews?
I don't know, really. I haven't been asked to do a whole pile.
Really?
Yeah. Have you ever rang me?
I know we spoke about the defensive side of things. If you're coming in and you want to be, if you want to be the Woolly Parkinson and just play for myself, and an inter-county corner forward isn't just patching the side either. Unfortunately for you, Woolly, it won't last forever. You can ask ex-players that. You can ask, you know that yourself, Woolly.
Yeah, mine never started at all.
Yeah, well, that's neither here nor there.
AIB, backing club and county.
All right, lads, let's take a look ahead to the weekend's club action. And let's be honest, it is a sensational weekend's club action. It's AIB's the toughest provincial championships, and it's all football this weekend, which will suit the three of us here in the studio. First on Saturday night, and this game is going on TG4, I'm pretty sure, and there's no reason why it wouldn't. It's Slochnaill. I told you Air Sport has raised the bar, lads. I'm telling you, you just need somebody coming into the marketplace like this, and suddenly TG4 showing Saturday night games. Someone will definitely tweet me and say they did this before Air Sport ever came aboard. But look, that's it said now. Anyways, Slochnaill versus Kilcar. The odds for this one, lads, is very close, considering this is Slochnaill. This is like double Ulster champions in the last 3 years, and All-Ireland finalists twice, and they're 4-5. You know, so it's not too far off even money. Kilcar, star-studded Kilcar team, are 11-8. So I'd say an awful lot. I'd say the viewership figures for this one will be off the charts to see Kilcar up against, you know, probably one of the big four or five clubs in the country.
Yeah, we don't even need to talk about them, like, because they do have some of the best players, most exciting players. Even if you look at the Derry team, who obviously aren't too exciting at the minute, but you know, Chrissy McCaig and Brendan Rodgers are two of the best players in the country, I feel like, and the way they play for Slochnaill, the way they're let off the leash from fullback and centre back is amazing to watch. But I don't know why it's so tight in odds, though. And I know there's two good teams, but I mean, for me, Slochnaill are just making a habit of this now. They've just quietly gone about beating the Down champions and the Throne champions.
They're the new Cross McGlenn, a lot of people are saying, that you kind of trust them to grind out these, and a lot of them 1 point wins as well, you know, close games. They're coming out on all of these.
Yeah.
So that's not a any sort of fluke, and this is happening over a 3 or 4 year period.
And I know Kilcar haven't been here since the 90s, early 90s, but I mean, Donegal teams don't do well in the Ulster Championships. I would have thought when Slochnaill got over Tyrone champions, when they got over Kilcoo, that was the sort of road opened up for them now. Like, I know Mickey Moran won't be hammering that point home, but it seems like it's theirs to lose, and I think the odds should be reflecting that a little bit more.
Yeah, and Stephen McBrearty, lads, is a player that you want to look out for on Saturday night, because watched him a good bit with the Donegal Miners, and he was absolutely brilliant in 2014, and I was been waiting for the last 3 years to see him onto the senior squad. And he's our senior team, and he's been on the squad a couple of times. This is a really, really talented player. It's Paddy's brother, so I'll be looking forward to seeing him, how he performs against the top team like Slochnaill. That's the only game on the Saturday night. Sunday then, obviously a very early start at 5 a.m. We've already mentioned this is the international rules, so let's just graze over that kind of strange time, and we get to the Connacht Club semi-finals, right? So we talked about Castlebar Mitchells. A little bit of disrespect last week was to Mole Hill. We thought this was going to be an awful one-sided. We took Connor's Mayo kind of bias without knowing without knowing any counter argument, and we took it, and they only pulled away at the very end. So like, maybe you're right, and Castlebar Mitchells aren't the force that they were, but that's not the game we want to concentrate on. They're 1-16 favourites, or so 1-14 favourites to beat Tourlestrane. Corrifin versus St Bridget's. Now, on paper, you're all going, brilliant. Seven of the last eight Roscommon titles, 5 in a row for Corrifin. This is going to be a battle of the Titans. Last year wasn't so much like that. Corrifin beat them in the Connacht final by 14 points. So like, this is a Bridges side potential kind of on the slide, and a Corrifin still at, you know, close to the peak of their powers.
Yeah, but Bridget's came into that game fairly confident last year, but they only ended up scoring 4 points in the final, which is a bit pitiful. So while I think that they might be on the slide a little, I don't think that the gap was that big between them. I think Cara Finn really had the bit between their teeth. I think afterwards Gary Sice claims that he said about Frankie Dolan should be embarrassed by what he was saying in the build-up. There's some real needle in
there
this.
There is needle,
real
yeah.
needle. I mean, these have been playing each other, I think, since 2006. I was just looking back at it there. There was actually a few years ago, there was a big row on the pitch afterwards. All the Cara Finn supporters came on.
They just got a late goal, did they?
Yeah, yeah. So, like, it's not the first. They don't like each other, basically. So, yeah.
Do you know what's interesting about that there? Sorry to cut you off. Yeah. Is that Gary Sice said that about Frankie Dolan after the match. And I frantically tried. I'm not the greatest researcher in the world, but I frantically tried to find what Frankie Dolan had said. I checked out the Roscommon local paper. Frankie Dolan didn't say much wrong about them. Like, but like, it's almost like this kind of siege mentality that Cara Finn used. Because Sice, to me, seemed like it was a bit harsh on Frankie Dolan for what Frankie Dolan had said about them, which wasn't much.
Sice was indicating that, like, Frankie Dolan was saying that all the Bridgets have to do is turn up. So I don't know whether it was fabricated by somebody to motivate the Cara Finn lads.
That.
It definitely worked.
Yeah, yeah.
But Cara Finn were so good in that game last year that they were favourites. They were favourites for the All-Ireland afterwards until they were beaten by Crokes. Now, their team hasn't changed an awful lot, but they're just laced with quality. Gary, speaking of Gary Sice, Michael Lundy, Dahi Burke, the Farahers, Jason Leonard, I think, shot the lights out in the county final. And you're coming up against, both teams have lads that have been around for a long time, the Kilbrides, then the Dolans, and even the Stacks, then with Bridgets as well. So, like, I don't know. Cara Finn are 4-1 on, and I'd fancy them, but I don't think it's going to be anywhere near 15 points, 14 points like it was last year.
Yeah, no, I don't think so either, if Bridges have anything in them. But it's gas actually what lads will use for motivation. And remember John Milan with the Davy Fitz. They were all telling John Milan in Waterford that Davy Fitz had said he's finished. So at the end of the game, Waterford, I think there was to be clear, Milan goes over in front of Davy and he's celebrating in front of him. And like Davy went, I don't know who's winding him up because I didn't say he's finished. Like, why would Davy say John Milan's finished ahead of a game John Milan's playing it? Like, it makes absolutely no sense. But Milan believed this. And I don't know, did Sice get wound up in the same way? But like, I mean, I've had managers that would be at that kind of crack. You'd be playing somebody in Leash and they'd be like, I work with a lad from there now, lads. They think you're useless. Do you know this kind of old thing? And there'd be lads going, what did they say? And it's like, I'm like, come on, you don't need that, do you? And obviously some players maybe need that. But like, it's very easy for managers to make things up to motivate players and get them fuming about stuff. But they probably want to level with them so this doesn't spill on over into pubs later on that night or something.
And like it's going to be interesting. I think there will be even more bite, as you say, Connor, from the Bridges camp, because they'll be on the other side of it now. Where remember what Sy said last year, and those boys will be so wound
circles,
up, like, and every single battle will be feisty, like for the first 40 minutes maybe anyway, like, but there's going to be a real marker laid down, I think, from Bridges.
Yeah, no, I definitely think so. You're 100% right. This, it will be closer, but you'd still imagine Cara Finn are strong favourites. I'm starting to see, yeah, they're 1-4. Which is not, like, they're very, very strong favourites. St. Bridget's are 7-2 in that one. Right, Leinster Club quarterfinals. First one we're going to look at here is Rathnew and St. Vincent's. And I was looking at some, Leighton Glynn been across a few different media places, that are right thing to say, this week. And he had, like, one comment that came out from him that I just couldn't get my head around, right? And I'll read it out to you. This is ahead of playing St. Vincent's now, and he plays for Rathnew. I think he's won 20 county titles or something, Leighton Glynn, an excellent player. We can only play our own game, win on our own strengths. I know most teams go out against Vincent's and tend to flood the defence. That wouldn't be our style at all. We would never play defensively, double mark a player, and I think it would be crazy to go out with that approach. We feel we've got good strength around midfield, and if we can stay in the game for the last 10 minutes, hopefully that strength will come true. Now, Leighton, like, there's one thing Rathnew playing the way, the style they play in Wicklow football, right? And that's fine. You stick to your principles. You're a fairly prestigious club within Wicklow. You're coming up to play St. Vincent's. So the tactics that you never do, like double marking some Wicklow player, and you're coming up against Dear McConnelly, and you're coming up against Mossy Quinn, and you're coming up against Carty, and you're coming up against all these players, Varley, all these lads Vincent's have. mate, there's nothing wrong with double marking Connolly. I'm just telling you that here and now. You are not selling your principles out in any way, shape or form to keep an extra eye on Connolly. So, like, I mean, I just cannot comprehend how Leighton Glynn would be able to come out and say, unless he's just bullshitting and they're going to... Now, whatever you say about playing ultra, ultra defensively, you can't change totally the way you play, but you have to have a plan in place for Dermot Connolly, not to get him setting up moves and destroying you. And this is why Dermot Connolly plays so well for Vincent's, because he plays more as a forward. He doesn't have the defensive responsibilities. He plays centre half forward. Centre half backs just kind of hold the centre, and he gets on ball in dangerous areas much more than he does at intercounty level. You have to have a plan for him. Best plan for St. Bridges or for Dermot Connolly at club level has been Chrissy McCaig, who scored 4 points off him, just attacked. In the county final the year before, Ballyboden put their most attacking wing back on him, just attacked. Lee Keegan has the mark of Connolly because he throws him off his game by attacking. Maybe this is what he's talking about that they might do. But, like, I mean, to think that you can't, that, you know, you don't have a plan for Vincent's and you'll play your own game against Vincent's. Come on there.
Yeah, because I was just going to ask, you're not advocating defensive tactics against Dublin teams, are you?
I'm not advocating swarm defences for any team. I think my always thing is you leave four forwards have to remain up there. I've been very consistent about that. But with the other two wing forwards, you can do what you want with them, and you're not selling out any kind of horrible football by doing that.
But remember, we had Chrissy McCaig last year after that game against Connolly, and he was brilliant. But it was like he was talking about playing his own game, and maybe that's where Glenn's coming from. They might not have a player of the calibre of McCaig that can go up and down the field and keep an eye on Connolly at the same time.
No, sorry to pull you up there. Chrissy McCaig wanted to play his own game and Mark Connolly, only a selector told him, we want you attacking. So Chrissy was very actually honest in that interview, and he said, I actually didn't want to play the way I ended up playing. He scored 4 points, and he was honest enough to say, it was one of the selectors told me that's what I should do, so I went along with what he said. His idea... his natural instinct, he said, would have been to mark Connolly tighter, which is an unbelievable dynamic. Like, I mean, I remember telling Keane Ward about that, and he was really surprised that this was some player going against what he thought was best, furred what the management trusted, what they wanted, scored fourth in play off Dermot Connolly. You know, like, it's a weird one like that.
It's a tough one, but when you're man on man with Connolly and you're being told to go up the field, and you're like, if he gets free, then I'm the one getting it in the neck then.
I'll tell you now, lads, for a fella who's played in the half forward line, and I had to understand how to play well in the half forward line because I was shite at getting breaks. I didn't like tracking back. That wasn't my game. So I developed my game over a very short pace of time, because I didn't play wing forward in a county level for as long as I wanted. It was my favourite position. But I tried to hold the half forward line. I would take, when that was my game, which is what Connolly's game is at club level, I would take being man-marked on the half forward line 100 times out of 100 over a fella running down the field and messing my idea up of how I want to be offensive here. I want to be an offensive half forward. You can't be offensive chasing someone. You can be in man-marked. And being man-marked on the half forward line when you've over, left, right, in front, and you can always double back, he's gone. You can't be proper. Like, fellas on a full-back line can kind of man-mark you because you're always making runs out or to the side. You have an extra run to make in the half forward line, so you can easily lose them. You can run into midfield and then go back. He's a man-marker in the half-back line is lost on you. And I think Connolly will take advantage of any man-marker in the half-back line. He'll love it, but he won't love chasing after some bloody flyer. That's a fact.
The only thing is that Vincent might, having seen what Chrissy McCaig did to him last year, and as you mentioned, the Ballyboden attacking defender did the same, that to accommodate Connolly and to, like, you know, change their system so that Connolly doesn't have to chase back, but that whoever that the half back is going to come into, that he's tracked and Connolly doesn't have to worry about it.
Yeah, no, 100%. But that's the decision that Vincent should be made do. Do you know what I mean? They shouldn't be put in a comfort zone. They should have to be scratching their heads on the sideline and say, what? How are we going to deal with this? We to get a midfielder to change his game to, you know, to help this or whatever. And I think that's what should be done. Vincent's are 1-16, lads. Ratneu are 15-2. So, like, I mean, you'd want to be crazy. It's not even worth putting Vincent's into an accumulator here. Portlaoise versus Moorfield. Lads, I'll be going to this one in Moor Park at 2 o'clock. Fancy Portlaoise because, like I said last week, Portlaoise are not as strong as they were. Brian Smith was able to come on the last day, you know, which was a big plus. Portlaoise didn't play particularly well in the second half against Rode. They were outstanding in the first half. Brian McCormack was excellent. The reason I fancy them is because I don't think there's only a toss of a coin between these two teams. And remember we talked about stupid GA rules part 75 or whatever number we put on it. Daryl Flynn and David White were sent off in the county final. So they're automatically suspended for this game. So it's not the stupid rule has them suspended for this game. It's the fact that they got sent off in the county final. The problem with the David White and Daryl Flynn is that if they beat Portlaoise, that's when they're lifting the cup, suspension kicks in. So I think Daniel Flynn has been suspended for two. Will be suspended for the extra game for lifting the cup, which is just bizarre stuff. I think David White is away with the army anyways and wouldn't be there one way or another. So like David White and Daryl Flynn are two senior Kildare starters over the last 5 years, maybe not in the last couple of years, but they're solid, very, very good club players. They're down those two. They're both midfielders. White is a club level. So for those reasons, you'd fancy Portlaoise to be able to get over them.
And what's the story with the suspension that kicks in for the same competition? So you only get suspended in that same competition you have the infraction in? Like, why is this trophy rule?
So he was sent off, and then the additional game is for the lifting the trophy. Is that it? Yeah.
The game suspension for the Portlaoise game is for the actual sending off.
Yeah.
Right? So they're both sent off. If they win the next game, that's when the lifting the cup suspension will kick in.
And that's included as the same competition.
If they lose, they miss the first.
It must be seen as the same competition.
If they lose, they miss the first round of the Kildare Championship next year. Would that be right?
Yeah.
Because they, you know, they wouldn't miss a game.
Oh, that kick in for that? Yeah, I think so.
You have to miss a game.
There's a club player in Derry who got sent off in an intermediate final. But the way it is in Derry, it's knockout then this year. So we had 2-game suspension, got sent off the very end of the final, 2-game suspension, missed this year, but they lost the first round, so now he's going to miss next year. If they lose that,
right,
they're out. So it's 3-year suspension for getting sent off at the very end. Jeez. Of a club.
Maybe just take a break until they forget about it and come back in 3 years' time. Go travelling or something, you'll be forgotten about. The other game in Leinster is Mullinahocta from Longford against St Lomond. So, like, I mean, that's a 50-50 as well. Longford champions are always solid in the Leinster club, and Lomonds, we know, are a good team. So I wouldn't be surprised who wins that game. And I'd say if I just look across here at the betting, the odds will probably reflect that. It's not jumping out at me here straight away, so I'm going to move on. It is St. Columba's, they call it, St. Lomond's. 5-4 and 5-6. Yeah, see, I'm not too stupid here, lads, right? Regardless of what you might think of me. The other game, Starlights of Wexford are playing Simonstown Gales. I thought the interesting thing here, Connor, is James Kilcullen. He is from Ballinahedreen in Mayo. It says Sligo player as well. Don't know how that he played for Sligo.
His uncle is one of the Kearns, was a really good footballer for Sligo over the years. He was part of the Bala team that would have won a few county titles. It would have been the same team that Pierce Hanley and his brother Andy and Andy Moran played on. Really good in Mayo around 2010, 2011.
Right.
But James Kilcullen actually played for Mayo as well.
Okay.
But he just happened to be around at a time when, like, Mayo have been fairly blessed with midfielders. James is really real solid player. You're in a battle when you come off the pitch with him. Real hardy. But he just, you know, he just kind of got lost in the queue of Mayo midfielders. So went and played with Sligo and did actually okay for them. So really good coup, I suppose, by Simonstown to get him on board.
It is a good coup because he was living in Dublin and, like an awful lot of people, relocated because he wanted a bigger house. So he moved out and started commuting from Meath. Got a phone call off Colin O'Rourke. How's it going? I'm going to tap you up here. So O'Rourke got him on board, and he actually missed the whole Meath Championship. He had an injury, but he's back now and he came on in the county final. And you'd imagine Simonstown Gales, who really need to push on in Leinster. They lost to Road last year. I think it was only by a point or two. So you'd imagine they'd be way too strong for Starlights. And I'll just check the odds in that one. Starlights are 10-3 outsiders. Simonstown are 1-4. Yeah, so they're strong favourites to beat Starlights. And be nice to see Simonstown. I have a bit of a graph for Simonstown Gales. I'm a big fan of Colm O'Rourke, and I think it's going to be Shane O'Rourke's last year as well, because he's in too much pain with his different injuries. And
it's a pity.
It's an awful pity. And, like, I mean, we had Colm O'Rourke on the show this time last year about Simonstown when they won the county final, and Colm was saying he would have given back every medal he won to see Shane winning just one county title, and he won it. And it was a really nice interview of Colm just talking about the relationship with his son and stuff. And it was Colm, actually, I think it was Colm I was reading saying that his good chance is going to be Shane's last year. Like, he was telling us last year that Shane just does his own personalised training because he can't do what everybody else is doing. And, like, Shane O'Rourke is such a talented player. It's just a huge pity the way his career has kind of turned out, considering what he promised when he came onto the scene. Munster Club Football Championship, Dr. Crokes are playing Kilmurry Ilbricken. Kilmurry, Ilbricken are a dogged, hard, tough team from Clare. Remember, Portlaoise won the Leinster Club in 2009. Huge, huge, strong favourites to get to the All-Ireland final, and lost Kilmurry Ilbricken in the Gaelic grounds in Limerick in a huge bloody surprise. Brian Mulligan got sent off early in that game for Portlaoise. Your lads from Portlaoise went out after the referee after the game and everything. There was all sorts of mayhem going on down in the Gaelic grounds. So we know all about Kilmurry Ilbricken and Portlaoise, but you'd imagine Dr. Crokes, you know, they're far too strong for them. And you'd imagine, yeah, they're 1-14 again. There's some really one-sided games this weekend. The other one in the Munster Club is Nemo Rangers versus Adair. Again, you imagine Nemo Rangers 1-14 again.
You're needing this?
You'd almost think I've been checking these odds before that, but I haven't. I'm actually trying to scan down through it as we're talking. So then the other one, the Ulster Club Senior Football Championship semi-final, Derry Gonnelly, who won their first ever Ulster Club match. Yeah. I was reading, was it their goalkeeper did an interview last week? I was reading, and the first ever match in how many years
Ulster Club,
they've been losing in the first round every single year, and they've a good few county titles to their names, don't they?
Like, and this is an interesting one. Obviously it's Fermanagh and Cavan Gales are playing, but Cavan winners hadn't won in a decade either in the Ulster Club Championship. So
do you know, just to cut you off on that, Cavan Gales are a club that I just can't get over, because you know all club teams, you'll scan them for county lads, and Cavan Gales have always had a good sprinkle of county lads, and they've always done nothing in the Ulster Club. I can never understand. Like, I'd imagine it's a very, like, disappointingly underachieving club outside of Cavan.
I do the same. I scan, and then straight away you see Micheál Lings playing centre forward. He's got Shawnee Johnson and Marty Dunn inside here, Cavan's main men. And they're just free scoring for them. And yeah, they blitzed everybody in Cavan. I think the average winning margin was 10 points, and Cavan went and played the interim champions. 12 points beat them by. They're flying, like, and like we say they're underperforming, but now they're coming up against the Fermanagh champions, and they're definitely backing to win anyway. So they're in an Ulster final off the back of that. Like, so nice handy draw for them, beating the interim champions, beating the Fermanagh champions, if they do. But I know Fermanagh are struggling. Tiernan Daly's a doubt for them, fullback, really good player, and they obviously would have needed him to pick up one of those lively lads inside.
Right.
So, That's a big problem for them, and I can see Cavan Gales in the final against Lough Neagh or Kilcare.
Yeah, and that's in Clonus actually. So I just want to check where the Kilcare game, that's in Healy Park in Tyrone. So the semi-finals are at neutral venues, which is fair enough in the Ulster Club. So we'll see how those go on. So listen, that's all the club action. What a weekend, though. It's a great weekend when you see Leinster quarterfinals, Munster and Connacht semi-finals. A lot of big teams playing against each other, big club teams. And once again, we'll keep saying it, what a time of the year this is. Vastly, vastly underrated time of the year. Way more should be made out of all these games. And maybe someday they will. That's all we have time for this week. We'll be back next Thursday, and we'll talk to you then. Good luck.
Yet it took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing houses for f***ing 10 years.
The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.